show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate, folks. Well, we've got things to talk about. We'll put it that way. And before we get into said things, introductions, I, of course, am Jeff Hur, with me as always, the Twitter detective himself, another year in the books, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this muggy, muggy Midwestern evening?
Oh, God. This morning, it felt like – this is what I described to my coworker. It felt like being vacuum sealed inside of a damp blanket and put into a stove. It was
That's fantastic.
So bad this morning. It sucked.
It was oppressive. You walked out and you're like short of breath. It like it constricts.
And this
it's
is
just, it's bad.
8 a.m. Like, yeah. God, how is it going to be? Ugh. I hate this summer. It's awful. It's so bad. But otherwise, I'm doing pretty well. You know, there weren't a whole lot of like fake accounts this year at the trade deadline. So there wasn't a whole lot of Twitter detecting to do. Either people are becoming smarter
or you are doing a job well done, sir.
Maybe
that's what I'm going with.
Maybe we're in the era of no more Twitter fakes. I mean, there were still some, but you know, they weren't good. They were like, they literally just changed their avatar and bio and still had their 20 followers and still had the actual handle of like Juggalo Puncher 23 or whatever nonsense they would have. They didn't even. It's not even, you know, like Ken Rosenthal is like that was like peak fake account because that was like that got people. But they're not even trying anymore. It's kind of disappointing, actually. I mean, you know,
well, you don't realize how much like how little you actually pay attention to the handle, you know, like, or at least I don't, because I'll just be scrolling through my line. And, you know, I recognize everyone's avatar so easily that, you know, there have been people that, you know, intentionally, not even, you know, just jokingly changed their – some people in, like, Royals Twitter or something was jokingly changed to Ken Rosenthal and not change their name or anything but just make funny. So I'm like, wait a second. Why would Ken Rosenthal say that? And then I'm like, oh, it's just because it's – so it's pretty. That was always kind of funny.
The
to me
good ones
really rely on that.
The good ones are when you know, Rosenthal is the man. He's the best at this reporting stuff, and and his reports are always either like really succinct. Like last year's, like Royals get Athletic Zobrist. That was his thing, but it was, you know, punctuated and capitalized and stuff. But when someone gets Heyman, to get Heyman's fake voice right, you just basically ramble and no punctuation, no capitalization, maybe a misspelling. And that's the dead giveaway if somebody tries to make a fake John Heyman account, is if they actually capitalize stuff, then it's like, no, come on, Heyman's not doing that. If he's breaking something, he's not taking the time to capitalize things properly. Why would he do that?
No, that makes very little sense.
Yeah, so that's the big red flag there, but you know, there wasn't a whole lot of that. And it was a pretty crazy trade deadline day. It's just, you know, it was actual reporting going crazy rather than, you know, nobody had time, I think, to make fake stuff up because there was too much stuff moving in the last like 2 hours before the deadline.
That's right. There was crazy, crazy, crazy amounts of trades, 18 trades or something like that.
Something
all kinds of stuff going on.
Like three or four of them were in the last literal, like announced right at the, at the end of the deadline.
And thankfully the Royals just right in the mix, big trade.
Oh yeah.
Brett Eibner for Billy Burns.
That's the move.
That's the move. That's the one that's going to get the Royals back on track. See, it was funny because I get like, you know, notifications from my sports score app about the Royals and beyond, just like the game that's happening. And So it said Royals trade outfielder Brett Ebner to Athletics for Billy B.U. and then dot, 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 because it cut off because of the thing. And I was like, he's back. No way. And then I opened up and I was like,
oh, Billy Burns. Billy Burns is the exact opposite of Billy Butler.
Literal exact opposite.
Pretty much.
But thought wow. that I just thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that would that would make you jump, I guess.
Yeah. He's one of my all-time favorite Royals, but that is neither here nor there.
That was their only move.
That was their only move.
They were neither buyers nor sellers, really.
Yeah, that was one of those I hate to use this term this way cuz the kind of garbage for garbage. It's not what it was, because neither player is, like, you know, total garbage. It's not like the Sanchez Guthrie trade, which at the time
was trash for was. Trash. Yeah,
but you know, it's the same. You know, I don't know what other term to use to say it was just like kind of a. I think I termed it on Twitter a change of scenery trade, where both teams are just hoping. Well, maybe if we swap these very similar players, then I guess not very similar, but maybe if we swap
similar, you know, impact.
Yeah, similar level in terms of. You know, prospect versus outcome players to see, hey, maybe something will click in a new place. You know, who knows? And I think Billy Burns got his first start tonight. Is that right?
Tomorrow, I think, is tomorrow. When he'll start. Okay. Yeah.
He got called up today, though.
Yes, he did. He
went right down to AAA, and now he's back. So.
Yeah, and another thing that when that happened, he had a beard with Oakland, and the Royals have a no beards policy in the minors.
I didn't even. Oh, in the minors.
In the minors, yeah.
I didn't even realize that it had that.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Yankees have it throughout, you know, at all levels. And I think the Reds might. No, the Reds couldn't, because they had, like, Sal Fasano, and there's no way you were going to get him to shave. Maybe no beards, maybe mustaches are allowed, because I guess the Yankees, I mean, you know, Don Mattingly was with the Yankees and had that mustache. So I guess no beards. But anyway, so he went to Omaha, had to shave the beard, and then like 2 days later, they call him up to the big league. It's like, man, that's like, what if that was his game? And I mean, I assume he's probably married, but he's like 26, so he, you know, could be married. But you know, I mean, what if that's what if his, you know, what if his wife liked the beard a lot? I don't know. That's kind of cruel.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Truly, truly unfortunate. As a card carrying beard haver myself. I'd find that incredibly unfortunate. So, Billy, if you're listening, I'm sorry for you, but congrats on being called up to the big leagues. So
that's about all the insight we can really offer on that deal.
That's pretty much it.
Billy Burns is fast. Contact guy. One of the best bunters in baseball, I guess. Brett Ebner never really got the hit tool down, and he does have some power and some athleticism, and there it is. That's the deal.
Kind of it, you know. Hopefully it works out for both teams.
Yep.
But it kind of the Royals were there was a little bit of controversy around this, because so I heard something interesting, and I haven't yet validated it, but I heard on the radio this morning on my way to work that the Yankees, who traded Aroldis Chapman and Andrew Miller, both.
Mm-hmm.
Miller to Cleveland and Aroldis Chapman to Chicago Cubs. So got 8 players in return for them. And they actually got another player too for Carlos Beltran. So they essentially got 9 players for trading 3 pieces that Miller was under contract for another 2 years, but Beltran and Chapman both ending their contracts. They were free agents after this season. So, but for all that, they got 9 players, and I heard that they had the 10th best farm system in baseball before the trade deadline, and after reevaluating, they now have the 2nd best farm system. So the Yankees, yeah, who, by the way, are better than the Royals right now record-wise, just did a ton to replenish their system, get a lot younger, and have an eye towards the future. Whereas the Royals, you know, they kind of packed it all in, and everyone thought, seeing the returns for Miller and Chapman, that okay, the Royals have got to be trying to cook something up for Wade Davis. But then, was it 2 days before the trade deadline?
It was that Saturday. It was like Saturday afternoon,
so
like late afternoon.
News came out that Wade Davis was injured, and he was being moved to the DL. And the news got broke by some kid,
yeah,
who took. us who happened to be on the same plane as Wade Davis going to where was – I don't even know where they were going.
They were going from Dallas to Kansas City.
Yeah, oh, yeah, because they were playing the Rangers. Mm-hmm. And so he's going back to Kansas City, and some kid takes a selfie with him, pops it on the internet, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, what the hell is Wade Davis doing? Not with the team. And next thing you know, he's on the DL. Hochaver went on the DL, I think it was a day or two before that.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? And so two of the prime candidates for being traded as, you know, top quality relievers that have been really driving the whole trade market so far, mm-hmm, went on the DL. So the Rose are essentially powerless now. They're not going to be able to trade guys that are hurt. Nobody knows the extent of their injuries, especially when it was a forearm pain or whatever for Wade Davis.
Flexor strain.
But when they initially diagnosed it, it was just like
like a forearm strain or something.
Yeah,
and they were getting an MRI, and the MRI came out clean, and that's great, but he's still on the DL.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to be tough to trade a guy on the disabled list. You know, and even when he comes off, you know, the regular restrictions after the deadline apply, but the DL, two DL stints this year really hurts him. And so, yeah, it just kind of came out of nowhere that Davis was going back for this MRI. And it's like, well, what does that mean for anything? Yeah, the Royals really got snake bit the last minute on those two injuries, especially when you look at, like, what, you know, Miller brought back. You got Clint Frazier, who's one of the best prospects in Cleveland system, and Chapman brought back Gleyber Torres from the Cubs, and even Will Smith, former Royal, went to the Giants for a couple of good pieces, and Jeremy Jeffress was included in a trade that paid off big. So, you know, a lot of crazy relief trades, and not really the kind of market for starting pitchers, and the Royals kind of missed any kind of chance they would have had. I mean, maybe those things would have, you know, maybe Wade Davis's issue would have come up in a physical on a trade, but, you know, once he's going for an MRI, you can't trade him. No team's going to take him, especially for what the Royals would be asking for compared to what other teams were probably asking for and what they ultimately got.
Yeah, and apparently the part of the Royals' problem why they weren't able to move him before they found out he was injured was because they were asking for quite too much. And you know, something along the lines of there was rumors that the Nationals were interested in, that the Royals were asking for Lucas Giolito and Trey Turner, which is it their top two prospects, or at least two of their top prospects, if not the top two.
Nationals. And they're both guys who are hitting the majors in their early 20s already. And
yeah, like
Turner hit a bomb today. So,
yeah, you know, so the Royals were asking for both those guys, for Wade Davis and, you know, unless you're in desperation mode, you're not going to give up two players of that caliber for a reliever who – Wade Davis is in a little bit better situation than someone like Chapman because he has an extra year on his contract. But still, you know, it's the returns, especially when the Nationals are doing well already anyway. So it'd be more like it's a luxury to have that nice – if they had the players to give up, but the Royals were apparently asking for too much. But
yeah, and through all of that, they, you know, Miller was still out there, still is an option. You know, Jeffress, who's been really good since he left the Royals.
Yeah, strange.
Go figure. Usually it's the other way around. You know, he's been very good. And then the guy that the Nationals ended up getting, Mark Melancon, you know, he's passable, perfectly fine. And when you're looking to just replace Jonathan Papelbon, I mean, there it is. That's fine. And so, you know, it was a big ask for the Royals, and rightly so. I mean, they still feel like they're going to contend next season, and Wade Davis should be a big part of that, provided his health is okay. And so if they're looking for a big return on it, it makes sense to be looking for that. But Hochaver, you know, being a free agent next year and with the Royals pretty much out of it, I mean, they could make a huge run, but it would have to be a huge run. You know, Hochaver would have brought something back, and I think it would have been interesting to see what the Royals would have gotten for him. But it wasn't meant to be. He's not going
to
pitch again this year. He
has the everyone's favorite new injury, thoracic outlet syndrome.
All the kids get it these days,
you know?
All of them.
It's, you know, I heard someone, they mentioned another, I think they were talking to Mike Boddicker on 810 this morning, and they were like, they were talking about that very
thing. I can't imagine.
Yeah. And they were like, what is this? They're like, never heard of this injury, and now all of a sudden everybody's, I mean, just this year alone, you've got, you know, Chris Young had it a couple years ago. He was kind of one of the first, I think, not the first, but kind of one of the first to really get the surgery. And then you had Matt Harvey had it this year. Kyle Zimmer had it. Now Luke Kochaber has it. And that's just off the top of my head. And you've got, you know, they interviewed Chris Young about it after Kyle Zimmer came down with it. And he mentioned how it was something that it was kind of, we talked about it on the show a little bit, but how it was something that once he had the surgery, it was just instantaneous that he felt better, and he credits it with saving his career. So Boddicker's, what he was saying is that it's just something they've just recently discovered. And so before, you know, they didn't know what was, people would just, pitchers like Chris Young would have shoulder problem after shoulder problem. My shoulder hurts. What is there to do? And there'd be nothing they could do. They didn't know what was causing these issues.
You
and
just
then now
figure
they're
it's like dead arms.
Yeah, because it's not actually in the shoulder. It's Nate Buchady, he explained it a little bit better than I'd heard, because we talked about it before, how there's the rib thing that kind of pinches something. But I guess somehow it pinches a nerve that comes out of your spine near the base of your neck or something. I don't know. And that's what he was saying. And
sounds fun.
And it, yeah, right. And it, that nerve is what leads to the shoulder pain. And so they, you know, open it up, move some things around, and I guess you don't have that pain anymore. But so, I mean, I guess it's theoretically, you know, possible that they just, oh, hey, we just discovered this thing exists. So, well, yeah, hopefully it'll help a lot more pitchers now, you know. But,
well, yeah, and it's kind of like, you know, before Tommy John surgery, if you were done, I mean, you might be able to, you know, rehab and rest, and maybe something will heal, or maybe, you know, you can just get along without a fully functioning UCL. But for the most part, you either gutted through it and were a shell of your former self, or you were just out of luck. You know, there wasn't really a procedure to fix you. And it took, you know, Frank Job experimenting and trying something that seemed to make sense. And now Tommy John surgeries are pretty regular, pretty routine, really. And maybe that's the next thing for thoracic outlet syndrome. There was a book by Chuck Klosterman that just came out, and it's talking about like the way that we look at things now compared to how we look at things in history, and how like advancement is always, you know, moving so fast. And his comparison is that, you know, in the future, we're going to look at the way we treat cancer today like it's bloodletting and leeches, because the advances are going to be so great. And so, you know, I think maybe with this thoracic outlet stuff, maybe it's something like that, where you're discovering more, you know, more of the reasons of why somebody's having these issues and can find creative ways to fix them. And, you know, sports science is a huge deal. I mean, it's, you know, you think of the amount of money poured into these guys, and it is in a team's interest to find a way to keep their guys healthy, to get them healthy, and to diagnose things. And so, you know, I think it makes sense why you're finding more of these kind of, you know, people coming down with this kind of injury and condition, because it just, it's probably happens way more often than it ever gets announced, because nobody had a name for it until now. And now they do. Yeah. And now it seems to pop up, and it seems like it's almost a trendy thing, but it's just that it has a name now. You know, there are tons of other examples of things like that, but I won't get into them, but just like, you know,
well, that's really interesting, actually, because, you know, I could definitely see something where, you know, 40 years ago, it's exactly like you said, people were probably just like, they were just SOL, and now we're like, man, can you believe they like didn't even know what Tommy John surgery was? And they didn't know anything about that. And
yeah, before, you know, it was like,
fix it, and
here's some
and
cortisone now, shots.
Yeah.
Here's some greenies. Here's some painkillers. Get out there and throw eight innings.
10 years from now, it'll probably be a situation where we look back and say, man, can you remember we didn't know what thoracic outlet syndrome was? And, you know, I'd read some things interesting. This is kind of an aside, but along these same lines, we never do that here.
Right, never.
It's very unusual. But the idea that, like, our generation, you and me, right, like, part of the reason why that nostalgia is so huge and why we are so nostalgic as a generation, more so than any previous, is the biggest change, they're the most advancements in technology have occurred in our lifetime. So, like, technology has advanced more in the last 25 years than the previous 150 years, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess depending on how you can, how you consider an advancement in technology, you might be able to argue that, but, like, just from a changing your way of life standpoint, it definitely changed. I mean, you went from, like, the invention of the TV in, like, 30s or 40s or whatever, and then, like, 30 years later you get color TV and it's like, oh my God, you know. But, you know, with us, we grew up, we had color TV and it was essentially, you know, just some maybe minor basic cable channels. And then you move to, like, all these channels and satellite and all this stuff. And then, you know, next thing you know, we've got high def. And I don't even know if you could find a standard definition channel anymore if you wanted to. So
I mean, I know they're out there because my parents watched them on their HDTV.
There you go. But my dad probably watches Big Bang Theory on standard def.
Yeah, yeah.
But so I always thought that was kind of interesting, though, that idea that, you know, because think about it, right? Like, when we were kids, you know, we still had landlines. I mean, the big thing was, I remember, you know, the first cordless phone we got in our house. That seems asinine to even think about that as a big deal.
Because it's already obsolete now.
Yeah, but that was a big deal when we were kids. And now we're to the point where in my pocket, I can pull out a device that's more powerful than the computers that sent people to the flipping moon 50 years ago. So, you know, it is. We crack jokes about the recency bias of thoracic outlet syndrome, but that's a very good point that you brought up, and that's kind of interesting because we most likely look back and there's going to be a lot of pictures. Because who knows, you know, like, if you have thoracic outlet syndrome and you've got some sort of a pain in your shoulder, then whether it's a mental thing or it is actually a physical thing, you may alter your delivery because of it. And then maybe that's what caused the rash of Tommy John surgeries, right? Because then you're relying more on your elbow instead of your shoulder. And then, so now you're looking at, you know, maybe we can solve two problems by theoretically only solving one. So that'll be kind of interesting to see how that plays out over the next few years as we start to see this kind of trend upwards in terms of the amount of thoracic outlet syndromes surgeries we see. So it'll, you know, I'll be kind of curious to see how that, we'll just kind of put a pen in that and we'll document that as we go along here. But that's kind of an interesting thought that you bring.
And regardless, the Royals lost out on some trades.
Yes, that's the overall point of what we were talking about. And unfortunately, it was a very quiet trade deadline. So, I mean, at this point, the Royals are turtling right now. They're just kind of like, you know, it's acid rain right now. We're just going to turtle up. Our shell's going to protect us. And then when the rain is done and 2017 season is about to start, we're going to get out and start moving. I mean, is that kind of the impression you get? It's hard to think they're really kind of going for it this year at this point.
Yeah, at this point, they're so far behind. They have to leapfrog so many other teams, and they didn't address any of the core issues that put them in this position. Plus, a lot of those are just injuries. You know, Luke Hochever's out for the year now. Mike Moustakas is still out for the year. You know, it just turns out that, you know, they're not hitting very well, and the starting rotation isn't that great. So all of those things are still problems going forward unless they just magically change. So I don't think that they feel like they are really in it, but, you know, they also weren't in a position where they had to trade off guys. You know, like Edinson Volquez was someone that we all really kind of figured was going to get traded because, you know, teams always want starters, and he's been generally pretty good in the last two-plus seasons. And, you know, he's affordable, and Royals wouldn't ask for a ton. You know, they wouldn't be asked for, like, two top-10 guys, but – you know, as it kind of worked out, the starting pitching market really didn't pop up that much going into the deadline. It seemed like most teams were really looking at relievers. And so Volquez, I guess the deal that the Royals were looking for never materialized, or maybe they weren't looking all that hard. And just didn't do anything. And I'm not sure what that means for the future. I don't know if that means that they think that they're going to be able to get him to exercise the mutual option next in the offseason, or, you know, a lot of people are speculating on if they're going to make a qualifying offer to him once he or both sides decline the mutual option, or if they're going to work out an extension. You know, the pitching market in this winter is just not that strong, and someone like Volquez, who has a lot of innings and pretty reliable, could probably cash in. So it's probably in his interest to see what the market will pay him, unless he's really comfortable in Kansas City. So maybe the Royals sense that, and that's why they didn't try to trade him. They want to keep him around so they can continue to negotiate. You know, I don't know. Or maybe it's just they're still waiting for the deal, and they're going to try to get him through waivers so that they can make that deal, you know, even here in August after the deadline. But, you know, those deals are always so tricky because you've got to sneak a guy through. And while the Royals probably could get him through, it's just, you know, it just takes one team to claim him to pretty much gum up any plan. So I don't know what's going to happen there. You know, Morales was another guy that we kind of thought would get traded, but it really seemed like the Rangers and maybe the Astros were the only teams really looking for any kind of DH help. And the Rangers went out and got Carlos Beltran, and the Astros, it seems like they're probably pretty comfortable with going with, you know, whomever they have available. And, you know, they could always call up a catcher and put Evan Gattis at DH and see what happens there and just kind of go. So Morales really didn't turn into a whole lot of value, and the Royals probably weren't going to get much of anything for him. So they didn't really bother. And they also traded Brett Eibner, who I think would have benefited by a Morales trade by probably playing maybe some DH, and you rotate some guys through in the outfield and get some young guys at bats and rest some other guys. But, you know, for now, Volquez and Morales are still on the team and really, you know,
still Royals.
And the only guys, the only deal was that Eibner for Burns, and, you know, maybe something will pop up, but I don't really know who the Royals would look to trade from the current team, other than Volquez and Morales at this point, especially when you consider that to make a trade after the deadline, you've got to get those guys through waivers. So, you know, any of the younger guys, you're probably not going to get through, even if you want to trade them. You know, I guess you could probably get someone like Alex Gordon through, but I don't think even if they wanted to trade him, they'd get a lot for him. Lorenzo Cain maybe would be a guy, but somebody would claim him, I'm sure.
The non-trade deadline, as another aside, sorry to interrupt, but it's fascinating to me, is it not? Like, just the fact that, like, you would think from a certain perspective, right, that you could just – all the teams would kind of be – complicit in this. They'd be like, all right, we know these two teams want to make this trade, we're not going to claim these people.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. And I think sometimes that actually does happen, but then other times you're like, hey, wait a second, that guy's going to our division. Mm-hmm. F this thing, we're going to cut this out, and we're higher up, so we're going to make a claim. Like, sorry to interrupt, but I always thought that was funny.
Yeah, and that was always kind of like an understood kind of thing between other teams. But you know, then it became that whole kind of thing where it was like, yeah, they want to block a team from getting them. And basically, for anybody who isn't sure of the waiver process for after the trade deadline, it's basically, you know, up to this year is August 1st, but it's usually July 31st. Teams can trade whomever to whatever team as long as they have the agreement, and that's fine. After the deadline, you still see trades because teams, they will put players on what's called revocable waivers. And so you put a guy out there and every team has a chance to go through and put a claim on him. You know, the team putting them on is basically alerted if somebody claims them. You know, it's awarded according to the lower standing within the league of the team placing the player on waivers. And then it's up
and is
to.
Is it based on last year's record or current record?
It's current.
Current, okay.
Yeah, and so you look at it from that standpoint. If the Royals want to put Edinson Volquez on these revocable waivers, well, they can put him on, and if a team claims him, like let's say they put him on and the White Sox claim him, Well, then that means that the Royals can either pull him back and he stays on their team and he can't go back on waivers. They can work out a deal with the White Sox for any player that they don't have on their 40-man roster or that they can get through waivers. The Royals can release him outright to the other team, and they just assume the contract. Like back in like the late 90s, that happened where I think it was the I think the Giants, maybe. I don't remember which team it was, but they claimed let me pull it up. I was looking at this yesterday, and I forgot the details of it. But the Padres, they picked up Randy Myers. The Blue Jays put him on waivers. The Padres claimed him to keep him from getting to Atlanta. And as it turned out, the Blue Jays just released him to them. And so there were like 3 years left on his contract, and he was already losing velocity. And so they basically just dumped the contract on him. And that just can happen. You can just let the guy go. And that's why usually guys with huge contracts will slip through waivers and nobody claims them because they don't want to get stuck. So you can let the guy go to the team, or if they clear waivers and nobody claims him, then you can trade him to whatever team, as long as, you know, they're trading somebody who has also cleared waivers or not on the 40-man roster. So that's kind of how it works. And so the White Sox, they could claim Volquez just to keep him from getting to the Tigers, say. So it's just, you know, the difficulty in that is that your return's tough, because like if, say, the Royals wanted to trade him to Texas and they wanted to get like Joey Gallo, Joey Gallo is going to get claimed by the Twins first, second that he's on waivers, and they're going to have to pull him right back. And so, you know, I think the return usually ends up being less. You know, one of the bigger post deadline trades was that one between Boston and LA, where like Crawford and Adrian Gonzalez and all those guys got moved because they all had huge contracts and nobody claimed them. And so they just dumped people off. And so that's the way it kind of works now. And yeah, you're right. There, a lot of times teams just let guys go through because they know that, hey, we're not going to get in the way because whatever. But it's become more and more where teams will get aggressive and they'll claim guys and then other teams will pull them back. And so this time of year, you'll hear about so-and-so went on waivers. And it's not that the team's trying to get rid of them. It's just that they're trying to see what, you know, if they can sneak them through or if a team claims them, maybe, you know, maybe that indicates that they might get a better deal out of that team and maybe they're more interested in trading, you know. So that's pretty much the way it works with the deadline. And that's the way the Royals would have to trade either Volquez or Morales at this point. And, you know, either way, you probably get about the same return for Morales, I bet. You know, maybe like a double A guy who's not on a 40-man roster. That's probably all you get for him. Probably all you would have gotten for him before the deadline anyway. So Volquez probably a little more value. So I would say the Royals probably aren't going to trade him.
Yeah.
Just because there's not going to be a deal that comes together because they either have to deal with a specific team or, you know, they can't get the guy back because he won't clear waivers.
Well, Volquez is it's kind of a tricky situation with him because – as you mentioned, the, you know, they can offer him the qualifying offer, or, you know, are they going to, what's going to happen? They're obviously they're going to both refuse the mutual option. I think that's pretty obvious. So it feels to me, I mean, Volquez is 35, right? So he was having a decent season. His last couple starts have been atrocious, including tonight as we record.
Yeah.
As his final line was five innings pitched with seven earned runs. So, ouch. But
yeah.
I just saw a tweet from Joel Goldberg. But before his last two starts, counting this one, he was 3-0 with a 2.25 ERA. Or no, wait, that's just versus Tampa Bay. I'm sorry, never mind. I read that wrong. But anyway.
He had pitched better before the Texas game last time. Between the Houston meltdown and his last start against Texas, he pitched pretty well. Just not great.
Yes. And so the point being, there's a better chance than I would normally think that a guy like Edinson Volquez actually takes the qualifying offer and doesn't even really think about it. You know, I heard Jeff Passan on the radio a week or two ago talking about the trade deadline, and he said if the Royals offer Volquez a qualifying offer, he's going to take it. You know, and I think the prevailing thought on that is
almost $17 million.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of money, first of all. And
when he's making like 11 this year?
Yeah. In addition to that, you know, word is from Volquez, he really likes it here, and he likes the team a lot. The team likes him. He seems to fit in really well with the team. Mm-hmm. And that's – I think I could definitely see, you know, someone of his age relative to baseball being kind of older, that that kind of stuff would matter. He's like, you know, I only got a couple of years probably left of effectiveness, you know, kind of similar to the Jeremy Guthrie a couple of years ago, and says, okay, you know, I'll just – try and have as much fun and win as much as I possibly can. So won a World Series here, let's stick it out. But so I definitely think that's a possibility, you know, but I've also, I think David Lesky mentioned, you know, having a something like a, just offering him right now, just a 2-year, $26 million deal or something like that. I mean, if you're going to, if your plan is to do the qualifying offer, which is, like you said, roughly $17 million, for Edinson Volquez, which is nuts, by the way.
It's a lot
absolutely
of money.
Absolutely nuts, considering
and,
that.
And they would have to decline the option, so he'd get his $3 million buyout on top of
that's
that.
That's right. That's a very good
which
point.
Which is coming no matter what, but still, when you're looking at it as a $20 million investment in Edinson Volquez, that's a lot of money.
Especially when you – and I've always kind of look at this for comparison's sake, and – we've kind of talked about this amongst some of the BP Kansas City guys, but just from a macro perspective, the difference between like Major League Baseball Players Union and so, like the NFL Players Union. I mean, NFL is king right now, and they make more. Baseball makes a ton of money, and NFL makes way more. They're just the most popular sport by a mile right now in America. And yet you look at Edinson Volquez has a good shot at making $17 million next year. And if you were to franchise tag a quarterback, which is essentially what a qualifying offer is, if you were to do that in football, where they do the same kind of thing where they average out the top salaries for the position, I don't even know if it would be $17 million. It'd be close, but any other position besides quarterback, and it would be less than $17 million. So you could be essentially Justin Houston or Von Miller, the best pass rusher in the league yeah. in football, and you become a free agent and they slap a franchise tag on you, and they're going to pay you like 10, maybe 12 million. And then Edinson Volquez is going to get 17 million for essentially the same thing with
being a middle of the road starter.
Yeah, with about 1,000% less chance of an injury that's going to derail his career. You know, I guess I shouldn't say that high because there's always the Tommy John specter hovering over every pitcher. But I mean, probably a 80% less chance that there's an injury that adversely affects the remainder of his career. So that's always kind of another fascinating dynamic to me. But, you know, I do think he's a guy that would take that qualifying offer. And then what do you do? So that's where you look at what Lesky's proposal is. That makes a lot of sense, I think, because if you're going to pay him $20 million anyway, then tack on another six, get him for another year. You know, worst case scenario, he kind of slowly declines over a year and a half like Guthrie does. And it just, at the very least, he's enough of a stopgap to give you, you know, two out of every three of his outings are serviceable. And then that gives you enough time to find a suitable replacement. And then you can kind of, you know, let things go from there. So it seems reasonable at this point to do that, especially when they don't have many options, really.
Yeah, they're in a pretty rough spot. There's not a ton in the farm system, and it is a pretty rough market. So, I mean, I think it's reasonable that Volquez is going to, you know, I don't know, maybe they look at that option, they redo the contract, and they say, hey, we're going to guarantee this if you like. We're going to add another option year with another buyout, and, you know, maybe you keep it going, extend it another year or something. I don't know if that's something they would do or not. And maybe he wouldn't be interested in that because, you know, he is older. Maybe this is his last chance to actually cash in any kind of a contract. But, you know, I think the Royals would be interested in keeping him, and I think he'd be interested in staying. So maybe that weighed into their decision to not trade him, or maybe that weighed into their decision to, you know, look for more in a deal for Volquez, so that, you know, they know that they want to keep him, but, you know, maybe that makes him more valuable to them just because they maintain some kind of leverage or more options to retain him for next year versus really having to compete against everybody. They can kind of just work it out with him themselves until a point where he rejects qualifying offer and does become a free agent.
Yeah. And yeah, it just, the Royals are in a tough place pitching now, but you know what? We'll have all off season to talk about how the Royals are in a tough place position. Let's take a break right now, and then we're going to come back with some positivity. We have something really, really positive to talk about, which has been lacking the last few shows. Mm-hmm. So this will be very positive. So stick with us, and we can cheer you up before the show is over. We promise it'll happen. So stick with us, and we'll see you on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Blasted to center. Back goes Rasmus. Grand slam, Mike Moustakas.
The Vault.
And that was Sinfonia in A Major by Sammartini. It's noted that the third vicar of Dunshire would play that every night before delivering sermons. It's a fine piece of music. It's 10 past the hour here on Vault Public Radio. We wanted to remind you, dear listener, that this week is Pledge Week at the Vault. Your support is vital, and giving to Vault Public Radio is one way to help support your community. And speaking of community, you won't find a better friendly community than the staff at Kelly's Westport Inn. Like public radio, Kelly's is a staple of the community, a standard, an icon, a Kansas City tradition. Fine patrons like yourself have been supporting Kelly's Westport Inn since 1947, when, I'd note, that Randall Kelly poured his first pint. Contribute to Vault Public Radio today, you can get an official VPR tote bag, or you could stop by Kelly's for an affordable pint, the best pizza in town, and a few games of Papa Shot. We're grateful for your support at VPR and for your support at Kelly's Westport Inn. Enjoy the tradition. And now, 4 hours of Best of the Baroque Period, followed by the Amstein Theaters and the Horse You Rode In On, hosted by Joseph Guevara Amherst.
Welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Thank you so much for sticking with us through that tiny little break. And as you heard coming in, a little instrumental version brought to you by none other than the Mixmaster himself, Michael Engel, of It Was a Good Day. And it's apropos because it was a very good day two nights ago. We're recording this on August 3rd for frame of reference. So two nights ago was the most recent start for Danny Duffy, and oh boy, was it a fantastic start. So let's put it this way, okay? Well, I'll phrase it this way. I was telling some of the B-Pro guys earlier that I hope my daughter becomes a baseball fan, and one day she asks me about this game that Danny Duffy pitched. That's how good it is that she would ask, first of all, but I hope that she does ask, so then I can tell her, the reason I missed the majority of it is because I had to give you a bath and I had to put you to bed when you were 6 months old, because I miss it. And then all of a sudden, we're holding her to get her to go to bed, and I get a buzz on my phone and I look, expecting it to be a Royals update, but then it says Danny Duffy's got a no-hitter through the seventh inning, and I'm like, oh shit. So I put her in her crib, make sure everything's okay, and then run downstairs, and I'm like, I got to turn this game on. And I see I see Danny Duffy's got 14 strikeouts. I'm like, oh my Lord, what in the world is happening? And his next hit, his no hitter gets busted up the very next inning, but that's the only hit he gives up. He ends up with 16 strikeouts, which is a new Kansas City Royals franchise record, and has what – I mean, historically speaking, I mean, they kind of talked about on the radio. I've heard some crazy stats thrown around that I can't remember the exact context of. But just historically speaking, a just phenomenal game, especially from a left-handed pitcher. I mean, the amount of actual swing and misses he had, which was 35 – is the most in the last five seasons, I think, next to or tied with Clayton Kershaw.
It's which I is think pretty damn most good. In even 15 years.
Is it 15? Okay.
Yeah.
So, that's I mean, you probably got to watch more of that than I did. So what, I mean, what were your impressions with how Duffy was pitching?
Well, it was weird because I was like, you know, I got back, you know, the Royals got crushed in Texas and, you know, they didn't make a trade and, so I just kind of came home and kind of just laid around and hung out for a bit and didn't really even turn the game on. I was going to clean the apartment. And I went to go grab some food and was listening to the game. And it was the second inning, and Duffy struck out the side and had, you know, five strikeouts so at that point. So I'm like, okay, something's working here. I'm going to go watch this. And so I watched the rest of the game. And, man, a lot of times pitchers will take the mound and maybe one pitch is really working well for them and their secondary pitch is working pretty good and their third best pitch is still working good and they look really great. Every pitch, like each, you know, his fastball, his changeup, his slider, they were all as good as they've ever been. It was awesome to watch, especially the changeup. And Hunter Samuels did an examination of that changeup. He's changed the grip, and when you combine that with what he's done with his fastball this season and changing to basically going out of the stretch exclusively, it worked out to where his mechanics were fine all night. His fastball had its regular zip. The curve was moving like crazy. He was spotting everything. He had command. The changeup was moving like a Frisbee, basically. They couldn't touch him. I mean, you talk about how many swings and misses they had. I mean, it was 35 swings and misses, and I think they swung at 60 total pitches. So they only made contact on 25 pitches.
Wow.
And most of those were foul balls. I mean, a couple pop-outs, some easy fly balls, one hit. You know, really nothing hit that hard. He walked one guy. And that was it. And otherwise, he just manhandled them. It was amazing to kind of watch it, especially when it's, you know, it's Duffy. And it's like, everybody knows Duff. You know, his story at every step, you know, he walked away from the game for a little bit. He, you know, came up in 2011 and was highly touted, but still kind of overshadowed by Mike Montgomery and John Lamb. 2012, he tears his UCL. 2014 actually has a very good season. 2015 not as good, and he's always been at that kind of tweener, the guy who, you know, maybe he'll make your rotation, maybe he'll be a really good reliever. And the Royals never really decided until they finally had to put him into the rotation this year, and he's responded in a huge way. He's one of the better starters in baseball right now. And this game, you know, he's not going to do this every night. And be, you know, be crazy to expect it, but, you know, his control has been so good this season, and that's the main thing. You know, it limits him from getting into those deep pitch count innings. You know, he doesn't have a lot of those 25 plus pitch innings that he always used to have. He's always good for at least one of those in a game, and even when he doesn't have his good stuff, he's limiting the damage. But on this night, man, he had everything going, and the Rays could not do anything. It was pretty amazing to watch it. You know, it just, if that's a hint of what he can be, oh boy, I mean, he's got something going, and you know, he's still fairly young. You know, so it's not like he can't continue to build off of this. So it really great to see it happen to a guy like Duffy, who, you know, just is one of the better dudes in baseball. I mean, just about everybody will say that he's the nicest guy they run into on the team. And for him to go out and just dominate, like, it was just literal domination. Like, they could not – it looked like a big leaguer thrown to a high school team.
It was silly.
It was just so – it was such a strong outing, like just ridiculous amount. And the thing, I don't remember if I mentioned this a second ago or not, when he ties Kershaw for that most swings and misses, that's in 22 fewer pitches in Kershaw's game. So he, you know, 35 swings and misses out of 110 pitches. Ridiculous.
It's insane.
Just ridiculous. And, you know, he just he looked fantastic. And if he's even half that good the rest of the year, he's going to have a great finish to the season. So that's really exciting to look at next year and what he can bring as a guy who might be opening day starter, might be, you know, a dark horse for some Cy Young votes next year. I mean, it's dangerous to say that because we get our hopes up on these guys. Like Ventura before the season and other, you know, Shields, we kind of felt was going to be really, really good a couple of times, and he was okay. He was really good, but he wasn't like, you know, an ace. That was a question we brought up a couple years ago. Duffy, I don't know if he'll reach into that ace, but he's definitely knocking on the door of those like high number two, number one starter kind of tier of guys. And that's still a pretty small club, even if it's not, you know, maybe one of the 8, 9, 10 quote unquote aces in baseball. And if he can have any kind of follow up to this kind of game, it's going to be something really exciting for Royals fans the rest of this season.
Yeah, it's definitely probably the most exciting thing to watch, and you should definitely click in. I don't know. You just check out on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City, bpkansascity.com, of course, that Hunter Samuels wrote. You mentioned Duffy changing his grip on his changeup, and Hunter wrote a fantastic article on this, and it was it's just like you mentioned, couldn't have happened to such a better guy. It's so great to see the success that Duffy's had. And I mean, you just look at some of his stats and they are, I mean, it's truly remarkable what he's been able to do when, I mean, walks have always been a problem, right? So, I mean, the lowest he'd ever had in his career in terms of walk per nine was 3.2. And that was in that excellent 2014 season that he had. Of course, he only had 6.8 strikeouts per nine innings to go with it. But now he's got 1.9 walks per nine innings. I mean, that is elite level in terms of walks per nine inning. That's not just good for Danny Duffy. That's just good,
for anybody.
Why? And 10.4 strikeouts per nine innings. I mean, that's sensational. Like, that is really good stuff. Just like you said, you know, it's – I thought after 2014 season, and we'd kind of discussed this with some of the other guys, after the 2014 season, it was very apparent that Duffy was a major league pitcher. You know, mm-hmm. Obviously he came up as a rookie. There were some things, but his rookie year was not all that great. And then he had, you know, what was starting out to be a decent season. Tommy John missed a lot of time, came back, did okay. 2014, he was really good. But there were still some things that – you know, he still walked a lot of guys. He still had those not just innings, but games that got away from him, that, you know, he'd be coming up on 100 pitches in the fourth inning, you know, and just have to struggle to get to the fifth and things like that. And so those are the things that he's been able to eliminate this season. And it's been really great to see him kind of take that step. And I mean, he could. If 2014 gave the impression that his floor was to be a major league pitcher that was serviceable or that was, you know, solid, then now I think for me anyway, I've risen his floor to be a number three pitcher. Even if he's not as good as his peak this year, he's shown that with the consistency that he's had, I think he's a number three pitcher easy, you know, but now he's shown that his ceiling, before it was always like, okay, his ceiling, even when he was still a prospect, before he even pitched in the majors, it was kind of like, you know, Duffy, he wasn't the highly hyped John Lamb, Mike Montgomery type. He was, you know, a three, maybe a two was kind of his ceiling, I think most people mm-hmm. thought, but a good one at that. But now I think some of the outings we've seen, I mean, he can be – his ceiling is a strong number one and possibly even, you know, a legitimate ace now. Cause that kind of, regardless of how bad the Tampa Bay Rays are, you know, a performance like that is impressive. I don't care who it's against. You know, you and I could go out there and do that, and it would still be impressive. You know, I mean, it was just a truly, you know, obviously I didn't see the whole thing live, but then I went back and saw some super cuts and everything of the all the strikeouts and the highlights from the game. And man, he was just, it was special. It was a special game.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's been an evolution from pretty much every step. When he came up, he was a fastball, curveball, changeup guy, and he never got the curveball. It never came around for him, really. And it wasn't until 2014 in spring training he started kind of messing around with the slider at the urgings of the Royals and just his own experimentation. And he basically turned it from, tried to get a little less speed and more break on a cutter. And it's developed into what he uses now, which he hardly ever uses a curveball at all anymore. It's pretty much fastball, changeup, slider. And, you know, like Hunter mentioned and pointed out, the changeup's developed into a strong, strong pitch for him. And what that really does is, you know, he's always been really good against lefties. Like in the last 4 years, I think three lefties have hit a home run off of him. And one of those is Jim Thome. So, you know, you'll take that. You'll live with that. So he's always been really good against lefties. And if he was just a strong reliever who could get lefties out and do fine against righties, that's great. But that changeup really gives him a weapon against right-handers because, you know, his mechanics are a lot smoother, a lot more consistent in every way now. And that changeup is going to come out of his hand looking like a fastball. And he dials it up to 95. So you got to be ready for that. And it has so much fade on it, and he's commanding it so well right now that it becomes a huge weapon against right-handed hitters. And so now he's really good against both. And if you can do that and you don't walk guys, you're going to be a serviceable starter at worst. And what he's doing is he's basically coming out and blowing it past guys, you know, every time out. And even in this stretch as a starter, you know, even counting the games where he was working his pitch count up, 15 starts, 90 innings as a starter, that's, you know, 6 innings per start. And that's including those, you know, 3 or 4 or whatever inning games where, you know, he was just trying to work up after being in the bullpen. So considering that that's where he is with those included from where he's been as a regular starter, where, you know, 5 1/3, 5 2/3 was the average. It's just a huge leap for him to be taking this year, and you know, I do expect it to continue. I mean, I know it's 15 starts, and you could say small sample size, but we've seen a lot of these things developing over the years, and it's exciting to get a chance to see if he can build on it even more from this point on.
Yeah, and you know, you talked about, you mentioned how he's still at 27, he's still relatively young. And an interesting comparison that you can bring up here, I think you look at Jake Arrieta, who won the Cy Young last year. And I was kind of messing around just looking at different stats. And when you look at Arrieta, right, he was before he got traded to, I guess if you include the year he was traded to Chicago, which is 2010 through 2013, so four full seasons, as a starter. He had, in 409 innings pitched, he had an ERA of 5.23, right? That's 72 games he started. A whip of 1.42, okay? Jake Arrieta. So since then, and that was when he got traded the year he turned 27. So since then, he has hold on, let me pull up the stats. My computer is being all kinds of dumb. But essentially, it's really good. Okay, he won the Cy Young last year, so my computer's acting up, so I can't get him to you exactly. But so then if you take Danny Duffy's first 4 years, 2011 to 2015, he has 80 starts in that time period, 443 innings. So, I mean, 80 starts to 72, 443 to 409, essentially.
It's pretty close.
You know, roughly the same sample size. But Duffy's ERA over that time period was 3.8, which it didn't seem like it's that good, you know? Like, when you think back of Danny before this season, you know, it's – a lot of that helps because 2014 he had 149 innings of 2.5 ERA, which helps. But at the same time, Duffy, because of the way he got some of his results, it didn't feel as good as it was sometimes. You know, like, maybe he only gave up one run in five innings, but when you have 110 pitches and things and you walk six guys – even though you struck out nine, you know, a game like that seemed like a Duffy type game. But anyway, he had 3.8 ERA and then a 1.3 WHIP. And you look at those and compare them to, you know, Arrieta for roughly the same time frame, and Duffy was even better. So the point of all that being, you know, it's the idea that Duffy can still improve at 27. And can still take that step into being an elite pitcher. You know, we've got someone who's dominating in the league right now who did essentially that exact same thing. So it's certainly something that's within the realm of possibility, and it could be happening right in front of our eyes. And if, you know, some of those stats are maybe inflated a little bit because Duffy spent a lot more time as a reliever than Arrieta did, but if even still, I mean, 80 starts in that time frame, that's a lot of starts. So, you know, there's definitely a possibility there that, I mean, he could turn into – everyone's looking at Yordano Ventura the last couple of years to be that superstar and was kind of like, well, Danny Duffy might be able to do some things too. We might have misjudged the whole thing, and Duffy could be that guy that just runs off and becomes, you know, one of the best pitchers in Royals history.
Yeah, and I mean, he just had one of the best games and possibly, probably even the best game a Royals pitcher has had. And, you know, when you're looking at a team that's had Steve Busby and Brett Saberhagen and Kevin Apier and Zach Greinke and David Cohn, that's pretty high praise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's pretty impressive. You know, I mean, and like you were saying with that Arrieta example, you know, it's not unheard of for guys to just suddenly turn it on. You know, it happens. They're the exceptions usually, but they also usually end up being exceptional talents once they break out. You know, you look at as hitters, Jose Bautista or JD Martinez, you know, guys like that who suddenly jump out and now they're, you know, mainstays in the middle of a lineup, you know, with potential for 30, 40, 50 homers. Or, you know, Arrieta or Rich Hill was a big trade commodity this summer and traded to the Dodgers. And he kind of emerged last year just out of nowhere. Andrew Miller, who was completely a bust, and yeah, he moved into the bullpen, but you know, it shows that the curtain doesn't drop just because there are struggles on these guys. And Duffy's a great example of that because he's had plenty of opportunities to struggle, and he's been sent up and down and up and down throughout the entire season. I remember before the season started, you know, there were questions between some of us in the BP Kansas City chat where we were talking about Duffy and we were like, is he out of options? Does he have options this year if they need to option him? Like, that's where it was, that he was a guy who, hey, maybe at some point they'll need to option him. And now he's doing this and looks like, you know, he's been so consistent. It doesn't seem like it's going to be something that stops anytime soon. And if this is a post-type breakout, the Royals will really benefit because they don't have a lot of other options. One, and two, it's a guy that they developed, held on to, and now he's really paying off for them. And again, you know, great guy in the organization who I think everybody in the Royals likes and a lot of fans like him. You know, just it's really impressive all around. And you know, it's more than just this one start. It's not just that he blew away 16 guys one day. It's right. That he's been doing a lot of this for the last couple months.
Yeah.
And we know the potential's always been there, and it seems like it's unlocked now.
Hochaver had a game where he struck out 13 once, but
with no walks. Yeah.
Yeah, but he came back the next day, you know, within the next couple of starts and just got blown up. So, you know, there's the difference there. But it also brings back brings back the question we had a few weeks ago on the show. Should the Royals make a move on Danny Duffy right now? You know, I mean, Duffy a few years ago kind of caught social media acclaim, if you will, with the hashtag bury me a Royal thing that he started. You know, that was before they were even really good. And he was right. just you know, just kind of showing his admiration for the organization. We've had him on the show. He's been, you know, really involved in the community, really seems to like being in Kansas City, like the team. So it seems like, I don't know who his agent is, but it seems like the kind of situation where you could say, hey, Danny, you know, here's 5 years, $80 million. And that's a really good price. It's a contract both Royals and Duffy could live with and feel good about. And then you look at the fact that it's only 5 years, which the Royals are going to feel good about. And then Duffy, you know, 32 isn't what it used to be for pitchers. I mean, you look at what James Shields got before last season as a 33-year-old, and he got, what did he get? $75 million over 5 years? Is that, well, I don't know. What was his contract that he got?
That neighborhood, I don't remember it off the top of my head. So it was like 4 for 72 or something, yeah, like that. You know,
similar to the Kennedy deal, you know, Ian Kennedy, mm-hmm, example. So, I mean, Duffy will still have a chance to make another big contract, especially if he does really well in those 5 years. And, you know, he seems similar to like a Gordon or somebody like that, that you could see him going to his agent and saying, hey, I like it here. Let's make it work. You know, I'm okay with taking a little bit less. I don't need to make $100 million if I can make 90 or $80 million. You know, I'd rather stay where I like. Yeah, it's just, you know, something that to think about. And it's very, I think it's within the realm of possibility. So if I'm the Royals at this point, I think you let the last star cool a little bit.
Yeah, you don't start talking to him right now.
You don't want to start going super high. But I think before the end of the season, you contact the agent and you say, you know, because the more off season he has, he's going to be away from the organization. He's going to be listening to a lot of people. He's going to be hearing a lot of things about how good he is and about how much money he can make. It's going to be harder to get him to agree to something at that point. So I think you let this super peak right now die down a little bit. And then I think you go after it and try and make sure he's locked in for the next few years.
Yeah, I think they're definitely – I think it's probably something they were looking at before anyway, especially with how he's been so consistent. I mean, I don't know what the numbers would figure out. You know, I'm always really bad at guessing at those kind of contracts. But it seems like something that they've got to be ready to get him in line with something. And it seems like he would be very willing to stay here too. I don't think it'd be like a blank check kind of scenario where he just tells them, hey, sign me for whatever. But, you know, I don't think that if they get close, it's not going to be dragged out too far. I think they're going to find common ground pretty quickly if they're even in the same, pardon the pun, ballpark on where the numbers land. You know, if it's something where he maybe wants another year, they'll probably – would have a pretty easy time negotiating some kind of an option or something. And, you know, I don't see it being much of a difficult negotiation if they're both willing and they both start at a pretty close number. And, you know, I think that's great. I think, you know, the opportunity to keep a guy in the organization, he would be a free agent after next year. But that would give you two guys like Duffy and Ventura to kind of build your rotation around. You would still have next year Kennedy and Jason Vargas, and then, you know, whomever kind of develops, whoever comes up, whoever they sign in other ways and down the line in other years, you know, you'd have Duffy at the centerpiece of that. And you know, Ventura is a fine compliment if, you know, if he responds and maybe this picks up his game, or if nothing else, he just continues to kind of get a little more consistent like he's been in the second half. Or, you know, in the last couple months, I guess the second half just started, but in the last couple months, the last, mm-hmm, you know, 3 or 4 turns through the rotation, you know, that could be something to really, really build on as key guys in the next kind of wave of contention that the Royals may have that they hope to see after, you know, a lot of the other big names leave. And, you know, if Duffy's the main guy in that, that's awesome. You know, that's a great kind of that's a great piece for the Royals and their development team, because they finally kind of got a guy to develop into that kind of player, which they've had so much trouble with in the entire, well, basically forever, more or less, at least since Greinke.
Yeah, it's, yeah, it's been quite impressive. And it just can't reiterate how much it's couldn't have happened to a better guy. So, you know, really, really hoping he just continues this tear. And, you know, this is the first time in a while with Royals players, obviously because they won the World Series, I think plays a large part, but just the idea that, you know, if Eric Hosmer, Danny Duffy, you know, if it comes up after next season and Royals can't afford them and they go off and make $200 million somewhere, you know, like, I'm not going to be bitter. I'm not going to be, you know, I'll be, you know, good for you guys. Like, that's awesome. You know, those are kind of, you feel that kind of, it's that kind of relationship, I think, with a lot of these players. And Danny Duffy, I think, one of the guys that really kind of typifies that, where you can really say, like, just happy for the guy, you know, no matter what. And you know how hard he's worked. You can see how hard he took it on the mound when he would struggle and how much he loves this team and how passionate he is. So just so great to see the success that he's had, and really hope it continues and he becomes that ace that we've been looking for. And as you said, hopefully it'll be another feather in the cap of the Royals developmental system that they finally got one to hit on a superstar pitcher.
Right. It's a lot of waiting, but you know, if you get one, they can't take it away.
It's very, very true. Just like those World Series.
Right.
And with that note, I think we will leave you this evening, afternoon, morning, whenever you're listening to the show. But thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. We will hopefully the Royals, they're not turning things around tonight, that's for certain, as they're losing 12-0 as we're recording. But yeah, hopefully they won two straight for the first time since June, so that's big. It's huge. You know, hopefully they can. I think they got another run in them. I don't think it's a huge one. I don't think the playoffs are in the cards this season. But as Danny Duffy showed just a couple nights ago, there's plenty of fun things to watch, and we'll have plenty of fun things still to talk about. So stick with us the rest of the season. We'll be here. We'll be talking Royals. Thank you all so much for listening. We couldn't do it without you. So be sure to tune in next week. But until then, thanks for stopping by, and as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.